on Iowa Politics for Friday, April 22nd, 2016. As we count down the days until the Iowa legislature adjourns, we look at the session that might have been. Washington weighs in on the Iowa Democratic Senate race, and what do the latest fundraising reports tell us about that race and House races in the 1st and 4th districts? Hi, I'm James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. With me today are Brett Hayworth of the Sioux City Journal. Good morning, Brett.
Happy Friday. Good morning, James.
Christinia Krippis of the Waterloo Courier. Good morning, Christinia.
Good morning, everybody.
Ed Tibbetts of the Quad City Times. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, James.
Aaron Murphy, Lee Newspaper, State House Bureau Chief in Des Moines. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, James.
And Gazette columnist Todd Dorman in the studios in Cedar Rapids. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
You can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher. First, what might have been? Iowa lawmakers are hoping they can wrap up their work next week and hit the campaign trail and fundraising circuit ahead of the November elections, and especially those who are facing June 7th primary challenges. Aaron, as we talked about before, this seems to be a session of low expectations, with legislators touting very few big-ticket items when they convened under the Golden Dome back in January. Have they lived up to or down to those early predictions?
I think there are a couple ways to look at that. From one perspective, there were questions coming into the session about whether a few things would kind of make the atmosphere at the Capitol a little more challenging, maybe a little more partisan than usual. You had the governor's veto of about $56 million for education funding. There were concerns that that would poison the well, so to speak. And you had a lot of new leadership staff, all new leadership on the House side. The governor's office had some new members in his negotiation team. So there were questions about how that would go once they got to budget negotiations at the end of the session here. So we're almost done here, and there hasn't been much of a signal that any of those things have had an adverse effect, that they got school funding done. Obviously, there are strong feelings on either side of those, but they came to an agreement and got it signed and got to the governor. And we're pretty deep into the budget work now. They're getting close to wrap up, and while the floor could still fall out from underneath them, there isn't any signal that that has gone poorly either. So those concerns have been alleviated. But when you talk about some of the big ticket policy items, and maybe we'll get a little bit into more detail on one or two of those here, those ones have proved a little elusive. They haven't gotten a whole lot of big policy issue items done so far this year. If they adjourn today, and they're not, they've got a few days left, but if they adjourn today, you wouldn't have a real big brag sheet to take home from this session. So that has been interesting that they didn't start out with a lot of big goals, and they didn't accomplish a whole lot, at least at this point, with a few days left to go.
The one big idea everybody seemed to be talking about back in January was doing something about water quality, at least making a start. And after, 102 days now, will they get anything done on water quality?
It's looking less and less likely. Now, like I said, there's still a few days. And as you noted, this is something that everybody agrees they want to do something on. The problem is nobody can agree how to do it. There's any number of proposals out there to find funding for water quality programs, which the state is kind of in the federal government's crosshairs to get their rivers cleaned up here. And there just hasn't been consensus over how to do that, where to find those funds. Some proposals shift existing state monies around. Some still would like to see that 0.375% sales tax increase for natural resources funding. The governor proposed sharing the school infrastructure sales tax with water quality projects, but there hasn't been enough support around any one of those to get something passed. So it's very possible that they will adjourn here without having taken any meaningful action on what is fair to say was probably the number one issue coming into the session.
And do leaders seem to be okay with that, or are they looking for a last-minute plan?
I think they're still hoping for a last-minute plan, but there's more and more resignation, I think, in their comments on it, that it's just might not happen. And it'll be interesting to see how that's framed if nothing does happen out on the campaign trail, whether, you know, the two parties blame each other for not getting anything done, or how that debate is framed. But I would say it's fair to say leaders still would like to get something done and are still holding out hope. The quote that jumps to my mind that we heard from Mike Gronsdahl the other day was, "Hope always brings eternal for me." But I would also say that consensus continues to be elusive. So I think that's how most of the leaders are feeling.
Mike Gronsdahl, the philosopher there. Todd, given what Aaron just told us, how will voters assess this session and what it accomplished or didn't, or will they even notice there was a session?
Well, I mean, with regard to water quality, I actually think the accomplishment is that I you know, after sort of hemming and hawing around and trying to look for money in the couch cushions and reshuffle the deck chairs and all those different cliches for not, you know, taxing anyone, I think they're starting to come to the conclusion that they can't do water quality without new revenue. That trust fund is sitting out there. I think probably if there's no bill, the product of this session is that everybody's sort of slowly coming to the realization that the trust fund that voters created in 2010 is probably the most likely vehicle to fund water quality. They're not ready to raise taxes in an election year, but, you know, the discussion this time I think pushes that closer to happening in subsequent sessions. I mean, otherwise, yeah, I mean, the expectations were low and lawmakers met them. So that's a good thing in that they didn't fall even farther short of what we expected. You know, one issue that I think of is medical marijuana. Here's something that polls show upwards of 80% of Iowans think should happen, that folks with serious illnesses should have access to cannabis and different derivatives of marijuana and different forms, and it just doesn't move. It doesn't go anywhere for a variety of reasons. That's a disappointment. So they're going to go out on the campaign trail and hopefully talk about water quality and education, all these things. They may talk about, you know, heated sidewalks and flower pots like they have in the past, but there are plenty of issues out there for voters to sort of say, we want something done on this. Here's what we want done. What are you proposed to do? I mean, that would be a great campaign. We'll see what happens.
You can read more about the unresolved issues of the State House in the Gazette and the Lee newspapers over this weekend. Aaron is writing about that. Thanks, Aaron. Next up, Washington weighs in. And considering how she entered the race for the Democratic U.S. Senate nomination, it probably doesn't seem surprising that Patty Judge has received the endorsement of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee for rivals Rob Hogue, Bob Krause, and Tom Feagin. Certainly didn't seem surprised and seemed to think that in the year of the outsider, they're better off without that endorsement. Ed, does this endorsement change the race at all? The race will be decided in about 6 weeks in the June primary.
You know, I don't know that it really, the endorsement itself means much. As you say, it was pretty well known that the Democratic political arm in the Senate favored Patty Judge. So far, Rob Hogue, Tom Feagin, and Bob Krause have to varying extents used it to try to portray her as part of the establishment. You know, and that's a toxic word for some in both parties, more so in the Republican Party, I think, but also for Democrats. I think the real test will be whether this endorsement is followed up with something else, most notably paid media. If that's the case, then it probably means something more than it does now.
Are you getting any indication that Patty Judge is spending a lot of time out on the campaign trail?
I've seen her once. She was here for the county convention. It was a fairly quick trip. It was just, you know, days after she officially announced. But I've not seen her.
Does that make you think that she's going to rely on paid media for her campaign?
Well, certainly, I think it's a more compressed primary schedule than we saw, say, in 2014 when the Republicans were fighting it out to see who would run against Bruce Braley, I do think that you'll probably see more reliance on her part on paid media. But that said, she outraised the other candidates in the race by a far amount. But you know, she still didn't raise a whole lot of money. She only had a month to do it, so there's not a lot of money in the till to spend on paid media. And that's why, you know, I wonder if this the SCC endorsement will lead to something else. Now, if it does, then you can probably guess that people are going to get, particularly who are not fans of the establishment, are going to get more exercised about this.
Okay. Todd, thinking about this race, sort of contrasting it to the Republican Senate primary 2 years ago when there were, I don't know, six or seven candidates running in what was a pretty spirited, sometimes pretty contentious race for the right to face Bruce Braley. Does this Democratic contest seem pretty mild and uninspired by comparison?
Well, it's different in that it's not an open seat. I think, Democrat, it's still in the back of Democrats' mind that beating Chuck Grassley is going to be pretty difficult, even with the Garland nomination fight and all of the things that have happened that have made, a completely invincible reelection look a little less so. But, I think judge's entry into the race and the Supreme Court fight has made it far more interesting than we thought it would be in the beginning. But it's still, a contest to nominate someone who is going to face a seriously uphill battle against Grassley. I mean, if you can lose to him by less than 20 points, I guess that would be an accomplishment. But that's the biggest difference, is that, Republicans felt like Bruce Braley was someone who they could beat and they could grab an open seat. This is an entirely different objective.
Speaking of that, Grassley was in Des Moines this morning and he was asked if he was facing the toughest race of his career. And he answered by saying it's not because of any one Democratic candidate, but because of the environment we're in. And the answer is yes. And he said the question for him is, what's the impact of the top of the ticket? For me personally, it's a Supreme Court issue, but even without the Supreme Court issue, it's the top of the ticket. Ed, does he sound nervous, or is he sort of laying the groundwork for an excuse if things don't go his way?
Well, I think it's an assessment of the situation, which is that there's a lot of uncertainty in the political winds. Donald Trump certainly injects a lot of uncertainty into it. If he's the Republican presidential nominee, how does he play in Iowa? And how does that figure further down the race? I don't think anybody really knows. So if you're an incumbent, that's got to have you a little bit nervous, I would think. The Supreme Court matter is something that's unusual, and Grassley is a big focus of it. Throw in the fact that it's a presidential year, which tends to be better for Democrats than off years when they're not so apt to vote. And, if you're somebody like Grassley, who typically wins by pretty large margins, you're going to be somewhat careful.
He has racked up quite a fundraising advantage over any of his Democratic challengers. Tell us about that, Ed.
Yeah, I think there was some attention paid to the fact that Patty Judge raised more in a month than her Democratic rivals did in the 6 or 8 months that they have been on the trail. Still, when you look at the numbers, Grassley is head and shoulders above all of them. And so, it's one of those things that, come the fall, if the powers that be see that there's a race to be won, there will be a lot of money in here from outside the state. But at this point, if dollars are doing the voting, Chuck Grassley's got a pretty wide lead.
He'll win by 20 points, as Todd was saying.
I make no predictions here. Remember, Bernie Sanders was in single digits at one point.
Okay. And Donald Trump wasn't even going to get into the race. So. But speaking of fundraising, campaigns filed their first quarter reports recently in the U.S. House races. Monica Vernon is leading in the first district, while Steve King lapped the one Democrat running in the fourth. Christina, let's start in the first district, where Vernon and Pat Murphy are duking it out. what do the fundraising numbers tell us?
You know, to be honest, I would say they don't tell us a whole lot just because it's sort of how it's been since the beginning. Pretty much every quarter since Pat Murphy got into the race, Vernon, of course, announced pretty much the week that Rod Blum, the Republican, was sworn into the U.S. House. So, but Vernon has always had good fundraising numbers. Pat Murphy, even last campaign cycle of 2014, was not an outstanding fundraiser. I talked to his campaign manager in the past, and, you know, he says that is the case throughout Pat Murphy's career, and he has managed to win his races. So he didn't seem overly concerned that Monica Vernon was a strong fundraiser, but, you know, I guess you start to look at those numbers piling up, and she has a lot more advantages with the activities she can do in the next, like you said, 6 weeks here with media and just kind of getting out and about. So, you know, I guess it's a wait and see sort of thing, but you know, she has proven to be a strong fundraiser, and as we've talked about in the past, gotten a lot of endorsements.
Right, and she started to run TV ads. I guess I kind of wonder about how effective TV ads are in a primary like this when your pool of voters is fairly small, but I guess we'll find out. Christine, well, do you think either Murphy or Vernon will be able to compete with Rod Blum in the fundraising race?
Yeah, like Ed said, I think in a presidential year is typically thought to be better for Democrats. So that could be an advantage. This is a Democratic district, so that will help. And Monica Vernon did out-fundraise Rod Blum this quarter, but he does still have more cash on hand. But you know, they both have some money in their own pockets that they can help put in toward the race. So I would say that it would definitely be a competitive race, money-wise and activity-wise, especially if Monica Vernon is the nominee.
Yeah, it's clear from the FEC reports that Blum and Vernon are willing to spend their own money on their campaigns. So we'll see how much more they're willing to spend. Brett, let's talk about the 4th District, where I guess the same questions apply. Will either Bertrand or Kim Weaver, the Democrat running in that district, be able to compete with Steve King's fundraising? And I guess he's not really noted as a great fundraiser.
Right. For the quarter that just ended, he raised $150,000, and that was the least of any of the four Iowa congressional incumbents who are running. So he's typically not been a big fundraiser. That's well known. You know, the only time he really ramped up fundraising was been the last couple cycles, 2012, when Christy Vilsack ran against him, and then he got up into the millions for the first time ever, and then with Jim Maurer a couple years ago. Certainly, Kim Weaver, as you said at the beginning there, you know, she had a paltry amount. It was, I think, $15,000. She had about the same amount of cash on hand, so she's way below what Vilsack was, or Maurer the last two times. So, you know, Weaver, it's going to be hard to see her competing with King's fundraising. Bertrand, that's, you know, he's certainly got a better chance. He's, you know, the Republican challenger to King. The weird factor is that we're not going to know how much we're not going to be able to see, I guess, publicly how much he's going to get until just about 10 days before the primary. There's one more filing period that comes in late May. He did not file as a candidate in advance by the 31st of March, so he didn't have to file a report, so we aren't able to see what he's done. So that remains to be seen. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the big question will be how much money will Bruce Rastetter and his friends put into this race to help Bertrand defeat King. Unfortunately, we won't get to see that number until shortly before the primary, but I think everybody will be watching for that.
Right, right. And that's another thing, another factor. I mean, you're asking about the what the candidates themselves do. Steve King told me a few days ago that he expects what any spending by the candidates themselves is going to be way below anything that outside groups are going to do in this race. He fully believes that there's going to be a bunch of PACs that will be involved, and that's where the big money will come in whatever advertising and such will come down in here in the last, six, 7 weeks before the primary.
Are either one of those guys, Bertrand or King, doing any paid media at this point?
Not,
Nothing so far. Nothing so far. No radio, no TV, nothing at this point.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it for this edition of On Iowa Politics. I hope it was worth your time. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Fan mail may be sent to oniowapolitics@gmail.com. You can find us every week on the homepages of the Quad City Times, Sioux City Journal, Muscatine Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Waterloo Courier, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I Cry Wolf, a Marion-based post-hardcore band, will take us out. If you know a band or talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, send us a sound file. And remember to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher. For Christinia, Ed, Aaron, Brett, Todd, and our producer, Richard, I'm James Lynch. Thanks for listening. Yeah.